This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
I'm going to tell you all a secret. I love local government. And I think we all need to say that to ourselves, particularly when we walk past newsstands and see various papers screaming about how awful local government is. The question I'm asked most often is, so Peter, when are you going to become an MP? And I look, and I've said the same, given the same answer for the last, I think, 12 years, which is, why on earth would I want to be an MP? I want to work in local government. I want to actually provide the services that people want and need. And actually, I think that, in part, is the mentality that we are faced when we talk to central government. Why do you want to be an amateur, Peter? Why do you want to play around at the fringes of service delivery? And actually, of course, it's not. It's when you actually ask somebody on the street what really matters to them. It's about whether their refuse gets collected. It's about whether the streets are clean. It's about the local youth centre. It's about those services that actually touch people's lives every single day. It's not about the defence budget. It's not about the vagaries of pension reform. It's actually about the things that matter to people every day. The speech today is titled Strengthening Local Democracy, and the title implies that local democracy needs strengthening, and I strongly believe it does. This country has a long history of command and control, and despite what the Baroness has just told us, we actually still have a long way to go. Local democracy clearly is stronger when it is delivered locally, and councillors are the key enablers of more empowered communities and a thriving voluntary and community sector. To what extent is local decision-making really, truly local? Councils, as you all know, are creatures of statute. Greg Clark recently did a review of that. He found over 1,300 statutory duties, which are legal requirements placed on local government, half of which have come into place since 1997. So, you know, we're getting less local before we get more local. On average, and it depends what type of authority we're talking about, only 25% of local government's finance comes from the local community. Obviously, there are changes afoot on that. But ministers, again, are saying to local government that there will be a council tax freeze over the next financial year. And for those of you who understand local government finance far better than I, the first thing that I learned when I became a councillor about local government finance is don't muck around, Peter, with the council tax base. It's the most important thing, because even if government finances a council tax freeze at 2.5% for a year, actually, to get that funding back, it's a massive amount of increase that we're going to need, and something that isn't really talked about by councils or the public. Government continues to hold us to account, and I will get onto some positive news for the government in a moment, but we submit over 190 data returns to government each year, containing 43,000 data items. Many of them are reported more than once a year. So, you know, again, a long way to go. I don't blame the current coalition government for this. Much of the top-down regime emanates from previous governments of all colours, performance framework, and I think it is something which all governments are responsible for to varying degrees. But I come back to the point that even the ministers who have previously been in local government have a view of local government which clearly isn't local government now. It's a view of local government from the 80s, every year of my 12 years as a politician, local government's changed. I have never been in a state of stability over that time. And actually, it's probably the most evolving part of the public sector as a whole. There's a quote from the Coalition Programme for Government, which is quite interesting. It says, the government believes that it is time for a fundamental shift of power from Westminster to people, and we will promote decentralisation and democratic engagement by giving new powers to local councils, communities, neighbourhoods and individuals. And to be fair to them, it moved very quickly to dismantle some of the key elements of the previous government's performance framework. Local area agreements, the targets around those are gone. Government office monitoring has been brought to an end, and the comprehensive area assessment has finished. And as Baroness Hannam said, the localism bill provides us with a new general power of competence, confirming a broader definition of the capacity of local government to deliver services going forward, something which the LGA lobbied for and something that we welcome. Of course, what Baroness Hannam didn't say was the localism bill is the most changed bill by the sponsoring government ever. To try and understand actually what's going to come out at the end of it has been almost impossible for councils to get a grip on. They have given us a greater flexibility over resources, and we welcome the change from specific ring-fence funding to a more general pooled approach. We also welcome the current consultation on the relocalisation of business rates, although it has to be said the devil is going to be very much in the detail, and potential for local government to get into a really difficult situation, particularly in two-tier areas, is ever present. So some progress has been made, and there's a long way to go. The change of fundamental culture of central control that still exists in Whitehall. As you'll see from the speaker notes, with another hat on, I lead the LGA on welfare reform. And I don't know how many of you are touched by the great edifice, which is the Department for Work and Pensions, possibly the most centralising of all the government departments. They do not have a localist bone in their body. And it is quite clear with the welfare reforms and the way that that's been approached that actually they obviously did not get the memo from Dave around the need to be localist. It's only an ingrained culture of centralism which explains the localism bills provides over 140 new powers for the Secretary of State. It's only an ingrained culture of centralism which explains why government sought to force councils to shadow mayoral rural systems in advance of local referendum. It's only an ingrained culture of centralism which explains why ministers are so interested in some of the minutiae of what councils do, like bin collection, or the front page of the Daily Mail. And, you know, if we are having policy that is driven by those sorts of ideological arguments around, you know, things that actually councils do really, really well, you know, we are in a very non-localist era. But it's not all down to government. My second contention is that councils are a key enabler for more empowered communities. So they too have a major role in strengthening local democracy. Councils do start from a very strong place. When local people have a query about public services, 48% of them will go to their local councillor. Only 29% of them would go to their local MP. 86% were satisfied with their local area as a place to live. And this is the odd paradox, that when you ask people about local services, they are hugely complimentary in most cases. When you ask about the local council that provides those services, not so complimentary. A record-breaking 64% of people trust their local council. And 44% say they want to be more involved in decisions made by council. So this contention that people aren't interested is also wrong. Up and down the land, councils are finding new ways of engaging local people and strengthening local democracy and empowering communities. This is probably one of the most exciting times to be in local government. Yes, we have the pressure of huge economic difficulties, but actually through that difficulty, innovation will be born. Making data accessible, something that the government has hit us with a big stick over, completely missing the point that councils have been providing data around everything from senior officers' pay to how much we spend on pensions for years as part of our annual statement of accounts. Across the country, councils are going further than the government is asking around opening up data. But actually, you can't just put out data in a raw sense, because actually you need to put it out in a way that local people understand and can use. The idea that putting every transaction of over £500 on a website, well, if anybody of you actually visited your local council website, it doesn't mean anything. You know, actually, it's a list of transactions and a list of company names. It doesn't tell you what that money was necessarily spent on. We're finding new ways of engaging with local people. And local government, I would say, is one of the best areas of the public sector at consulting with local people because we are on the ground. We need an onward devolution to local communities, and Selby District's community engagement forums are bringing together all of the public sectors in one place so that the public can see how the public sector is joining up. And local government has got a role in holding the ring, terrible American phrase, but in actually not necessarily providing all the services, but bringing those services together in a way that the public understands. So I'm really confident that if we can truly devolve powers to local level, then councils are ready to use these powers and freedoms to stimulate and nurture democracy at the local level. I just want to quickly comment on the rest of today's agenda, because there's another equally important, fundamental and integrated challenge that underpins much of the agenda today. And it's also central in the way in which we can promote a healthy democracy. And that's how we tackle the current financial crisis. Up and down the land, councils are grappling with continuing to provide frontline services and meet ever-rising customer expectations against a backdrop of reduced resources. Many have undergone, like the LGA, significant downsizing and restructuring, exploring the opportunities for ever greater use of shared back-office functions and co-location. On the issue of assets, it was interesting that, again, the government pronounced on council assets without totally understanding that actually if a council sells an asset, it can't put that into providing services. Actually, all a council can do with a capital asset is build another capital asset. The Prime Minister has acknowledged that local government is the most efficient part of the public sector, but that's no reason for complacency. Through our productivity programme, the LGA is seeking to help councils generate further improvements in productivity to get the very best value for money and outcomes for our communities and residents. With shared services, over 200 shared service arrangements either in place or in development, and the number is growing every day. New models of delivery. We are working with groups of councils to pioneer new models of delivery, whether that be through shared officers or working with the public or third sector. Capital and asset pathfinders. The LGA is working with the DCLG to develop best practice in the management of capital and assets. But I go back to that fundamental misunderstanding of what council assets are there for and what they do. On a personal level, I'm keen that our emphasis in the future is to promote a greater innovation in the way we provide services to local people, which is why I'm so pleased about Creative Councils, which is something that we are doing with NESTA, who are the National Endowment for Science and the Arts, which has already generated over 140 different ideas coming from councils about how to provide services differently. But as well as developing strategies for coping with the current financial situation, we also need to solve it. We need to do more to get the economy working. Centralisation and top-down control has proved a failure. David Cameron, Nick Clegg's words, not mine. Or the Open Public Services White Paper, which is the second principle of open public services, that power should be decentralised to the lowest appropriate level. Regional development agencies were not the answer. It's time to be radical, and it's time to devolve power from the centre. Belgium managed for well over a year without a government. The economy grew and local decision-making flourished. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, anybody that's potentially watching, that we could do without a government. But actually, what that proves to us is that in times of crisis, local government can really step up to the plate. Community or place-based budgets, we believe, provide a real opportunity to do things better. They provide a real opportunity to develop new ways of tackling urgent social problems, redesigning and integrating frontline services across organisations. We want to ensure that every council has the opportunity to do place-based budgeting. We obviously welcome Baroness Hannum and her the call for two pilot areas, but actually there are many councils that are clamouring to do integrated place-based budgeting. I think the really important thing to get out of today is to actually all be able to leave here saying, I love local government too, and actually we can deliver, we can help the government with the challenges that it has, but we can also help our residents with the challenges they will have. So thank you very much.